to Reach Out on In Horse Harmony. Today, Anna and I are honored to host Karen Pomeroy of Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary in Southern Arizona as our guest. Equine Voices is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping save Premarin mares and foals from slaughter. Karen is an amazing woman. She stood up and followed her dreams and her passion and decided that she needed to make a difference. Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary is her way of doing just that. Karen, thanks so much for being here with us today.
Welcome, Karen.
Thank you for having me.
It's lovely to speak to you again. We go way back when. It's close to a decade where I first met you in California, sunny California, where you and I both visited the Wild Horse Sanctuary, Return to Freedom. I believe that's close to where your journey began, and we'd love to hear some things of how it led you to Equine Voices and then why you chose the Premarin mares and babies.
Well, I've always had a love for horses, and before I went to college and started my career in the business world, I always wanted to be an advocate for animals, specifically horses. When I started volunteering at the Wild Horse Sanctuary in California, I learned about nonprofit work, and of course the Mustangs were near and dear to my heart, but during that time I learned about the plight of the Premarin mares and the foals. Prior to that time, I had no idea what Premarin was. I had no idea how it was derived, and I realized that there wasn't a lot of help out there for the mares and the foals, and the way that they were being treated was just despicable, in my opinion. And also, it's also too faceted, if that's the right way of saying it, basically twofold, where I learned that women that were taking the drug didn't know where the drug was coming from either, and what the potential side effects of these drugs had. So I decided to start my own sanctuary. My schooling was at the Wild Horse Sanctuary because I did everything from learning how to grant to, the bookkeeping to working with the horses, and that led me to where I am today, basically.
And that's a wonderful way to begin, I think. It's much like me being at Flag Is Up, running the Learning Center for Monty. You get exposed to every every aspect of the business there. And it allows you to hone in on what you really see as a benefit, and then you can make changes if you see that something doesn't resonate with you. So it would have given you a well-rounded base to begin your own sanctuary. Now, the listeners may not know, but I've been going to Karen's place for many, many years now, and we've been fundraising, doing classes and clinics, and bringing awareness to the mares and foals. And I've also gentled some of the Premarins up in Canada, the mares, the babies, the yearlings, etc. And they're very unique. They're very unique individuals. Their training really doesn't reflect any other kind of training. So if you gentle a Mustang, they're untouched. You gentle a quarter horse, a thoroughbred, they're domesticated. These mares, really, the best way to describe it would be to say that they are green remedial horses. So they're green, they don't know anything, and yet remedial meaning they have issues. So from a training standpoint, we're coming from a whole new area. You've got to be gentle with them and yet be able to take care of yourself. Plus the fact that these girls are huge. So when I'm here with the Mustangs or quarter horses, they might be 13, 14, 15 hand, etc. These guys are big. So tell us a little bit about your experiences when they first get off the truck.
Well, it's interesting because just like humans, I feel that these mares and the babies have different personalities. I think they've experienced similar situations at the farms, but they handle it differently. One may be a fighter, the other one may just give up, and that's probably true, you know, with other horses as well. When the horses come from Canada, they have a very, very long journey. They're usually put in the trucks loose because what they do, when they load them, they either drive them in on horseback. Well, that's how they used to do it, but now mm-hmm. I think they're using four-wheelers, and they herd them through chutes and then load them that way. Or they've been cattle prodded, and I've seen that at this end as well. Mm. So their experience, once they're loaded and the trip down here is not very positive. So when they arrive, not only are they exhausted because it's about a 2.5 to 3 day trip, but they've been removed from what they know, and here they are. They show up at a place that they have no idea where they are. Mm. So they come off the trailers. Usually the babies are in one compartment, and then the mares are in another compartment, and they're just loose. And they're my last rescue. One of the mares that we received, and she's pregnant. She's due to foal any day. Was injured on the trailer. She was, I think, the low girl on the totem pole, and she was roughed up a little bit in the trailer, so she has a scar to prove it. So anyway, they arrive, and normally what I do is my philosophy is when they get here, it's their time. However long it takes is what it takes. And so we change their diet. We give them really good food. We put them on supplements. And the biggest thing that I've seen when the horses arrive are their feet are in horrendous shape. And I think that's partially due to diet, but also just that they haven't been trimmed properly. Usually they rope them, and it doesn't seem like it's been done on a regular basis. So all their feet have been in horrible condition. And then the other thing that I've noticed that's been a common thread is that they're all head shy.
Mm.
So that tells me there have been some things that have been done around their heads that have not been favorable. So when they come here, we just let them be, and we do what we can just to spend time with them. Normally what I'll do is just sit on the feed bin when they're eating in the evenings or in the morning, depending on my time, you know, how much time I have. And then basically go from there. And the babies, they're different. They're wild. They don't know anything. All they know is that they've been separated from their moms at a very young age. They've been herded into the trailer. They're here now, and usually they just don't know anything. So they have a cleaner slate than the mares do.
Right. How old are the mares that come to you, and how long will they have been on the P-line? We're going to explain what the P-line is shortly.
I'm curious to hear about the story even before they get to you, Karen, because I know that a lot of people listening don't have the kind of details that you can offer in what these mares and their foals actually experience before they even get here.
We're drawing in.
So there are two questions here. I can either go back and answer what a life of a PMU mare and foal is, and then Anna maybe answer your question, or...
You can go ahead and finish up with Anna's question
let's
first.
Let's get the age in, and then what we've done is the listeners are going to go, what is this about? Where are we going with this? So we've just drawn them in enough to give them a little bit to realize that there's issues here and what we are doing. So how old are these mares?
Okay, so the mares, it depends. We don't receive mares that are very old normally, because what happens is if the mares can't produce foals, they're usually sent to auctions. The oldest mare I've received, she was 18 years old. Other than that, the average age of PMU mare, at least the ones that I've received, have been between about the age of 5 and I would say about 13.
Okay.
So they're in a prime age to, you know, to be rehabilitated and actually be given a second chance.
Mm-hmm, that's true. Okay, so let's go ahead now and go back, because I know that everybody listening is very intrigued, because we know obviously that there's huge help that you're offering these horses and giving them this second chance. Tell us a little bit about where did they come from? What is this all about, this Premarin mare situation?
Okay, well, I can go back in the archives, but Premarin was a drug that was derived in the 1940s, and it is made from pregnant mare's urine. So basically what happens is the mares have to be pregnant in order for the pharmaceutical companies to extract the estrogen from the urine of the pregnant mare to produce the drug Premarin. PMU, and we call them PMU mares, stands for pregnant mare urine. So that's what a lot of people don't understand. So anyway, PMU is pregnant mare urine.
Okay.
So the mares basically are bred on the farms, and they are kept pregnant the entire time. They're kept in very, very small stalls. I did some research, and for a 1,700-pound mare, for instance, as an example, the requirement for her stall would be a 5-foot-wide stall.
Wow.
What that means is they can't lay down. They're usually on a very hard surface. They withhold water from them on a regular basis because they want the urine more concentrated. And they use the drafts and draft crosses because they're bigger and they produce more urine.
Hmm.
That's a common question that I receive from people. Why the drafts? Why
I
the
just draft? Asked that one earlier before we came on to the recording. I said to Anna, what's up with all the draft horses? Why all draft? So thank you for bringing that to everyone's attention.
Yeah, and my feeling is, and this, I don't have a fact on this, or you know, but my feeling is that usually they're pretty docile. You know, draft horses are, I consider, the gentle giants in the horse world until they've been abused.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that could be part of the reason why they use the draft as well. But the main reason is because they can collect more urine. So that's the life of a PMU mare. Usually what happens is they are standing in a very small stall. They can't lay down. They're pregnant. And the farms are different. It depends if you have a big, big farm. You know, time is of the essence, and they're just a number. If you have a smaller farm, I do believe that they will let them out, you know, after 6 months or so. But usually the average, the mares will, gestation time for horses is 11 months as a pregnancy. So a PMU mare can stand in her stall for 6 to 8 months, sometimes even longer, before they actually let them out to pasture to have their babies. So basically what they'll do is they'll keep them as long as they possibly can to collect the urine, and when it's time for them to have their babies, a month or 2 months prior to that, they will let them out in a big pasture, and in the pasture there are normally stallions out there, or one stallion per pasture, that kind of thing. So when the mare has her baby, she goes into her foaling heat, and she's usually immediately impregnated. So what happens is she will get pregnant again shortly after she has her baby. Shortly after that, the babies are taken away from the mares and they're put in a separate area. Normally, unless people like me or groups, you know, like Equine Voices, if they don't intervene, the babies go to auction. 90 to 95% of PMU foals end up in slaughter because they produce so many babies every year. If you think of a farm can have 500 horses on it, 1,000 horses, the bigger farms, that if you add up the numbers, that's a lot, you know, that's a huge amount of new babies that are born every year. And so you might ask, what happens to these babies? Well, most of them end up in auctions. So basically, that's the life of the PMU mare. She's re-impregnated and back to the P line she goes. And that's what they call, you know, the area where they stand, where they actually have a collection cup attached to their hind end where they collect the urine. Normally, they're not taught to tie. They are not taught to pick up their feet properly. As I mentioned earlier, they're roped, or they can use a, what they call a tilt table, because time is of the essence, because they're in it just to really collect the urine, you know, for the estrogen.
Hmm.
So that's basically, in a nutshell, the life of a PMU mare and a foal.
And once she can't produce anymore, what happens to her after the 15,
normally,
18 years?
If she can't produce anymore, she will end up in an auction, unless, again, people like myself or organizations like myself intervene. But there aren't enough of us to absorb the number of horses that are being sent to the auction. They're just producing so many. And I feel that the pharmaceutical company will come down as one of the biggest contributors to horse slaughter ever because of the numbers that are being generated, the number of horses that are being bred.
You know, Karen, I listen to these kind of stories, and I've been aware of Premarin mares and Premarin as a drug for a long time. I've never been able to get my head, and certainly not my heart, around how this was ever allowed in the first place. I get that it's pharmaceutical, so I get that that's big money and big corporation and all of that stuff. But way back in the beginning, how did anyone decide that this was an okay method to create a drug and not have any kind of ethical or humane treatment involved in the process?
That is such a good point. And I think where we are today, there are so many, the Humane Society of the United States, I mean, there's so many large groups that are fighting for animal rights in general, not just horses, but these drugs were developed, this drug, well, Prempro, too, is part of it, were developed in the 1940s. There were no, I mean, I believe that if the FDA were to pass Premarin, it probably wouldn't pass today because of the side effects.
Mm-hmm.
That it has, and because of the links to breast cancer and ovarian cancer, Because basically you're taking a drug that they're claiming is natural, but it's not like the, you know, the female body. I mean, it's not the same estrogen.
Mm-hmm.
So there are side effects. But in the 1940s, that's when it was developed, and there weren't really any restrictions or any, there wasn't a lot of awareness about animal rights and how the compassion that we should have for these horses. And I think that's part of it. I think drugs were passed a lot probably easier than they are today, I would think. But there were two German doctors that actually developed the drug, and they started by trying to collect urine from a stallion, from stallions. But what they found was the stallions wouldn't stand still.
Yeah, what they found was they got kicked in the head, probably, and that should have been their first clue.
Right, and stallions don't produce estrogen.
Right, hello.
Yeah.
So then they thought, well, let's see about mares, pregnant mares. And mm-hmm. there's a book, if anybody's interested, called The Greatest Experiment Ever Performed on Women by Barbara Seaman. And she talks about where the drug came from, how it was developed, the doctors that were involved. I mean, it was definitely, she is so specific about where Premarin came from that if you're interested, that's definitely a good book to read.
Now, they pulled the drug off the market, didn't they? And as they did that, many of the Premarin ranches and farms were closed. So when I travel the globe, people come up to me and said, oh, the Premarin doesn't exist anymore, though, does it? And there's nothing in the States. It's just in Canada. And they have the impression that all the Premarin ranches have been closed down. How can you clarify that, Karen, and shed some light on it?
The farms in the U.S., the last study or the last research that I did, which was recently, a couple months ago, to my knowledge, there aren't any Premarin farms left in the U.S. In the 80s, there were over 450 Premarin farms between Canada and the United States, and now the latest statistic I read, there's 72 farms left in there in Canada alone. So the study that was conducted in 2002, the Women's Health Initiative study, is really the reason why there's been so much education, you know, put out there, because they're the ones that found the link between ovarian, breast cancer, dementia, blood clots, and because of that, the demand for the drug has been, it's on a decline. However, they're still producing the drug because it's sold worldwide, and there are still so many women that take the drug that have no idea where it comes from, what it could potentially do to them, because doctors may not be telling them or doctors may not know. And so basically they'll say, here, take this Premarin, take this drug for your hot flashes. It really helps. And women aren't asking the right questions. Well, where does it come from? Are there side effects?
Yeah, I can have personal experience with that because Mum was on Premarin. And when I was with you and learned more and more about this, I went to the UK and I was telling her about Premarin. She said, oh, yeah, I'm on that. And I said, I think you should change. And she went, Anna, you don't understand. You know, I get hot flushes. I'm going, Mum, and I showed her the scale. I'm going, hot flushes versus cancer hot flushes. It wouldn't take me a second to decide. But she works for a doctor's office. So like you said, she hadn't necessarily been guided or she hadn't listened. I'm not sure. But ultimately, this year I went back in February and I always, actually on the animal communication class, I have the hare from Gulliver and Little Miss in there. So we communicate with them on the classes. And what it allows me to do is introduce the concept of Premarin and educate people. So I had 14 people in the class in Yorkshire and Mum happened to be in there. And we did the hair samples, the hair analysis with these guys, and I talked about it. And that's when she said, you know, I did come off it. But now, Anna, it's all your fault. I have these hot flashes. And luckily, everybody in the room just listened and laughed. But it was that point of it was this thing of women don't necessarily hear what's being said because waking up at 2, 4, 5 in the morning wasn't appealing. So that's how she just went down that path. But
what I always say is that there are alternatives out there. I mean, there are natural alternatives. There are synthetic alternatives. There are pharmacies that do bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, which basically they take your blood sample, they look at your blood, and they try to duplicate what your system needs. And I've had this conversation with so many people, women, oh, no, I've tried the natural. I've tried the black cohosh. And I'm not a doctor, but all I want to say to them, and what I say to them is, well, maybe you haven't tried the right alternative because there are so many alternatives out there. You know, do yourself a favor and go back to your doctor and ask some questions, because you're only taking care of yourself by doing that, and that's what it comes down to. You know, one of my volunteer coordinator moved back to Virginia last year because her mom was dying of ovarian cancer, and they linked it back to Premarin. Mm. I mean, this is a real, real thing. And for us just to keep our head in the sand or to turn away from the facts, we're just hurting ourselves by doing that.
So is it possible that right now, even though there are no farms in the United States that are currently collecting the pea to make the Premarin, are you saying that there are still people in the U.S. that can get this medicine?
It's still sold in the U.S.
So
and
even though the
still prescribed in the U.S.
Wow.
I mean, I had a doctor's appointment a year ago, and the natural whatever clinic, and I went in thinking it was a natural clinic, and I went in to have my annual checkup, and I went to the bathroom to wash my hands, and there was a big bottle of soap, and on the soap it said Premarin, hormone replacement therapy, and I thought, okay, I guess I won't be coming back here, because, you know, the pharmaceutical reps are out there, they're whining and dining the doctors, there's so much money to be made with this drug. It was the number one selling drug for years in the 90s. I mean, for years, they made so much, this drug made so much money for the pharmaceutical companies that's going to take a while to die. But yes, it's definitely still sold and prescribed in the U.S.
That's just crazy. And I know that there are many other things that are just like this, but I tend to be a romantic idealist. And I just think, you know, I cannot believe that something like this can exist and that it's okay to just promote it, as you're saying, to women without telling them. I think along with any kind of promotion should come, this is where this comes from, this is how the horses are treated, the whole story. And then let's see if these women still want to make that choice or if they're willing to have one or two or five more hot flashes in order to find an alternative that works for them.
Right. Exactly. Hmm.
So with the 72 ranches left, what does that mean with the closure of the ranches? What happened to all those horses, Karen?
They end up in slaughter unless I get involved. And, you know, it's just very, I don't even know how, if I even go in this direction, it'll open up a whole other thing. But NARIC is North American Equine Ranching Council, is a council that was started by Wyeth Pharmaceuticals. And what originally they started this council to supposedly help the farmers and also help people to help the horses that were no longer useful, or if the farms shut down, what would happen to these horses? And basically, it's not what it appears to be, because they don't want to help rescue groups, because the bottom line is they don't want the public. First of all, they don't want the public to know that this is occurring, and that's why I think it's been such a secret for so many years. And secondly, they don't want people to think that these horses need rescuing.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, this council is a way to support the farmers. And so what they'll do is subsidize the farmers. So let's say that their contract is being cut, and let's say that the pharmaceutical company gives the farmer 2 years before they no longer are using their services.
Right.
2 years. So is that a logical number right there?
That's a logical number. Sometimes it'll be a year. But the experiences I've had with some of the farmers that I've worked with, they get about a year or two year window where they, you know, need to figure out what to do with the horses. There are a couple things that are happening right now. A lot of them panic and they just go ahead and say, you know, I have these 500 horses, I'm just sending them to the auctions, and of course they go to slaughter, because they, at that point, it's their livelihood. So they'll get paid by the slaughterhouses by the pound, you know, for the horses. So that's one thing that happens to them. Some of the farmers up in Canada are now breeding specifically for slaughter. And this is the one that disturbs me the most, because I don't know, unless slaughter is stopped completely, I don't know how that's ever going to end. So basically what they've done is they've taken an industry using the horses to produce urine. Now what they're doing is breeding the horses to send the horses to the slaughterhouses. And they're using the drafts because they weigh more, so they can get more money by the pound.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, per horse. It's sick. It makes me, I just can't even, it just is so sickening that this is happening. And, you know, we're on our way. Well, we've shut down the slaughter plants in the U.S., but in Canada, I mean, they've just opened up two more last year. So it's a whole other industry. So unless people like groups like mine intervene, that's what happens to these mares.
Well, Karen, I think that the area of slaughter is such a, it really is its own topic, as you said. I mean, there's so much education, I think, that could be shared with our listeners around what this even means. I think that there's so many people who don't understand. Really, I think that there's so many people who still don't even know that horse slaughter exists and what are the reasons that it happens and why would horses get sent to slaughter. I don't think that that's as public of knowledge as it could be. And so I would love to see us spend another episode together and really talk about slaughter and the challenges that the horses are facing in today's world.
Sounds great. Yeah, the word needs to get out there. The public is, there's definitely a misconception about that whole issue.
Mm-hmm. So before we finish up here, is there anything else that you feel like would be really beneficial for those listening to know about the Premarin mares and their foals?
Well, I think we've covered, you know, the day and the life of a PMU mare and a foal pretty well. I do have information on my website. There is information out there. I think the Humane Society of the United States deals more in that they don't really do the PMU. PMURescue.org, which is part of the United Animal Nations, has set up a whole separate fund and a website for the Premarins. So the information's out there, but I would say if anybody's interested in learning more about alternatives to log onto my website or to talk to their doctors about it, because I think that's where the change is going to happen. You know, we've already seen a decrease in the number of farms that are out there. My dream while I'm alive would to see Premarin farms go away completely.
And for the drug not to be available anymore.
Exactly.
I mean, that could come first, and that would save how many horses' lives just because somebody stood up for what was right and said, you know what, we can't manufacture this drug anymore.
Exactly. Yep, and I hope it happens in our lifetime.
Yeah.
So it's a big one.
Karen, go ahead and give everyone listening your website so that we all know where to find you.
Okay, it's www.equinevoices.org.
Okay, fantastic. And you've got all sorts of information there about the Premarin mares and their foals, about your rescue and what you do there at the sanctuary to help out the animals, wonderful adoption programs, and a variety of other programs that I think we'll talk about in another episode coming up real soon.
Wonderful.
I was just clearing my voice there.
I got that.
I have another thought, but I think we can address that also in the next episode. I'd like to just bring out the points of the other side, having worked in Canada, and some of the assistants that worked with me on the gentling of the babies and so on had worked at the Premarin farms. And so I'd like to, in the third episode, just for a moment, address how they actually perceived how they were taking care of these Premarin mares and why it was allowed, where you were asking,
yes,
Debs, why it was allowed, because they perceive it very differently than we do. And they truly feel that they're taking good care of them under the circumstances.
Wow.
And so we get back to that, I think, when we address the training and how these horses differentiate from other horses.
Well, that sounds great. So everyone listening, you know you have to stay tuned because we've just set you up for several other episodes. Karen's going to be back with us very soon. And in the very next episode, we're going to go into the topic of slaughter and learn a little bit more deeply about what that really means. So Karen, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Deborah. Thank you, Anna.
It's wonderful to be touching base with you again and getting this exposure out there even more. So thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, we're definitely very honored and happy that we can help get the voice heard for Equine Voices. So for now, we're going to sign off. This is Deborah.
And Anna.
For Reach Out on In Horse Harmony, dancing in partnership with horses and humans.